We are about to start our third year of podcasting, and as we look back, there is one thing we cannot deny.
It's because of you, our listeners, our day ones, our international coalition. Indy, I see you.
You came to our live shows, listened to thousands of episodes, responded with likes and comments on our social media, and helped us make moves in an industry where everyone has a podcast.
We have released over 250 episodes, serving you some of our best analysis and interviewing some of the biggest names, along with those making an impact in the wrestling industry.
So we just want to say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just wanted to say thank you, I guess.
Come on, Matt Michaels, be nice.
Go! Prepare yourself for another year of...
Welcome to another edition of Wrestling Talk.
This is the DeFalco Files with the one and only Joe DeFalco.
This is Three Count.
Hey everybody, it's Matt Michaels, and this is People I Don't Hate.
Prepare yourselves for another year of douchebaggery, hijinks, and some talking out of the ass from all of us at the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.
Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here, and I'm joined by Sin City Steve, and our guest today is one of my favorite independent wrestlers who should be signed. So if you're listening, Uncle Bruce or Mr. Khan, please consider it. Mr. Ray Rosas. Ray, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing great. Just enjoying a nice lazy Sunday at home and just recovering, getting ready for these, the holidays coming up. A lot of Christmas shopping to do. And it's not as stressful as most years. We got to run around and go to all these different stores. Everything's going to be done online. But, you know, that's pretty much it, man. Just kind of enjoying this independent wrestling off season,
yeah,
so to speak.
Yeah,
you know, where everything kind of is going to pick up again in January, and so just kind of resting, recovering, you know, all these nagging injuries. But it's been a great time, just spending time with family, being home on the weekends.
You know, and it's funny you say that too, because that's the same thing for as an actor. As soon as you hit right before Thanksgiving until right after New Year's, that period is that, like you said, kind of the off season where it's just like, okay, I could breathe for a couple of minutes. I know I don't have to worry about being by my phone every second to get that, you know, call that I have to go on an audition. For you, and, you know, having experienced it myself in the ring, does this time where it kind of slows down a little bit give you a chance for your body to recuperate? And how long does it take you to kind of shake off that, you know, that buildup of, you know, bumps that you've taken over time?
Like, I don't think this whole year, I guess, granted from March all the way up till now, has probably been the best year I've had recovery wise because of how infrequently I've been wrestling, you know,
right?
Because there's no shows running. Usually, you know, I'm wrestling, you know, in the past 3 years, I would wrestle every week, right? at least two times a week. And that's not also including running classes and doing some training, but then also like with my training, I always try to keep it low impact, more cardio based, so that way we're not wasting a bump. At least I'm not wasting any bumps.
Yeah.
Students they can bump as much as they want.
Yeah.
But it depends on the injury, because like I had a shoulder injury, and it wasn't even because of wrestling. I slept on it wrong. It's just getting old. So I slept on my arm wrong, and I had this nagging shoulder injury for months and months to the point where I couldn't work out. And couldn't do a push-up because of this front shoulder pain. And then, you know, we stopped wrestling, and then over time it just kind of healed up. So that's getting better. But it all depends on the injury. Because one time, a few years back, I tore my PCL in my knee. And it's like the ligament, because the ACL and the PCL, they kind of cross over each other inside the knee.
Right.
And the PCL is the thicker of the two. The ACL is always the one it's like the one that everybody tears.
Yeah.
So you have to do a special kind of work and effort to tear the PCL without tearing the ACL. Yeah. But I tore that, and it's like my knee swelled up with all kinds of fluid, but. Yeah. You know, I just braced it up and you know, I think I took a week or two off and then went back to wrestling until eventually became too much, like to walk upstairs and downstairs. And it's like, you know, I got to see what's going on in there. That's when the doctors finally said, hey, not only did you tear your PCL in your right knee, but you tore your PCL in your left knee.
Oh, shit.
And they're like, out of every 100 ACL injuries, there's a PCL injury, and you have two of them. And they told me to play the lotto. The left tear wasn't a complete tear; it was a partial. But the one on the right leg was a complete tear, so I had to get that reconstructed. But you know, it's the kind of stuff that you kind of work through it until it becomes unbearable, as I've gotten older and post knee surgery, I try to take better care of my injuries and to avoid. Them becoming more problematic in the future, because I think the most common injury you'll get will be like a lower limb injury, so it'll be like an ankle or a knee. And I've always been told like to wear wrestling boots because they have better ankle support, but they tend to hurt my ankles a lot. Shoulder, I think I've had a few shoulder injuries, but sometimes it's like just because how you bump,
right?
You get a little, you know. And it could be because you're in the match, you get a little fatigued, so your technique isn't as smooth. So the next you're bumping a little sloppy. But yeah, I mean, when I'm wrestling every week, three or four times a week, you know, and the injuries kind of pile up. But then you kind of learn how to work a little smarter, so you work around those injuries to not overexert yourself or not like, okay, well, this week I only have two matches and it's for these particular promotions. I know that I can give this much effort to get by and while still giving everybody enough, giving what they paid for. So that's always the tightrope you have to walk. But yeah, but this year I've been pretty good recovering wise.
Oh, that's good to hear, because I know a number of guys that I've talked to, that is kind of, where their head's been too. Like, breathe for a second, because now I can let this nagging injury heal a little bit, and then I can start working out even more.
that's been the other thing is like, yeah, with gyms and like, you know, in most parts of the country, gyms are closed, so you have to get creative and find ways to maintain our bodies and what we got here. I just gave up on that. I just said, no, I'm just gonna when the gym's open, I'll just whip myself back into shape. I do just enough to maintain what I got. And I didn't have that great of a physique anyway, so I just kind of like, you know, I'm just going to eat what I want, eat everything I want, maybe do a little couple, I'll do like 10 push-ups a week, and that'll just maintain.
But, you know, you just made a very interesting point, and that, I think, really shows how well you are with your character and your promos, because you are someone who... you can make those adjustments. You don't have to have the best physique, because you convey a lot of stuff through your eyes and your words. And it's fucking fabulous. It's one of the reasons I love watching, you know, come over and do a promo after you did a match. It's just phenomenal to see you spit out your words and convey such a confidence. That's the word, confidence, man, and it's fucking beautiful.
It took me a long time to get that type of confidence. You know, it's just, there's some people that have it already. There's confident talk, being able to talk. I pride myself in my versatility. I think I'm probably one of the most versatile workers in Southern California. I try to maintain myself to be as well rounded as possible. You know. And wherever I find myself, like, I'm lacking in certain aspect of wrestling, I try to work on it. That way, if I'm called upon by any organization or company, any promoter or booker, they need a certain role filled out, I could fill it. If they like, hey, we're short on time, we need to cut this, and I can be like, okay, no worries, that I can make that adjustment. Or if they say, hey, we're running short, hey, we need someone to fill in an extra 2-3 minutes, I'll go, what do you want me to add more time onto my match, or do you want me to add a promo?
Right.
And that's kind of what I do to make myself a commodity to promotions and to companies, and make sure, and earn that trust. It's like that way, anytime there's a problem like that, yeah, they can lean on me to and rely on me to, you know, keep the show rolling.
Yeah.
So like I said, I think one of my strengths is that I'm able to gauge a crowd or an audience on any particular show. So I know if I go onto a show okay, cool, I know what these fans are into, I could kind of figure out really fast by watching the first or second match, you know, what these fans are into, what they're like, if they're like some old school, you know, Southern style, then like, okay, cool, I can make that adjustment. If all these guys, they're in all these, or going to a show and like all these fans, they love some spots, so they want to be entertained with spots. And or if you could just, and I have this like game plan that I have, and like I'll go in, I'm like, cool, I'll try to win them over with character. And okay, if that's not biting, okay, let's just chain wrestle. Let's try chain wrestling. Let's see if they pop for a shoulder tackle and some basic stuff. If they they're not biting. If they bite on those first two things, great. Then it makes our job much easier.
Yeah.
They don't bite on that second thing. Okay, cool. Let's just go right to the high spot. Let's give some exciting action. And usually by then the fans have started to react. You know. If not, then let's just rush through this match. Let's go to the back as fast as we can, and let's move on to the next show. You know, but yeah, you know, it's a lot of things that I look at the mental side of it. You know, to where I just like, okay, how can I set myself apart from various other wrrestlers on the show? Like, you know, how many long haired bearded wrestlers are on the independent scene or in wrestling in general, and how can I be different? You know. So it's like, I need to be a talker. Okay, I'll talk more. If I need to be if I need to work on my be a mat technician. Okay, I'll work on my holds and various transitions. If I need to be a high flyer, I'll do what I can. I'm a little heavy, but I'll do it. But it's just I you know, be a jack of all trades. Yeah. You know, and then be a master of just one.
That's true.
Definitely, man. And now you had mentioned that 2020 has provided you a lot of rest and recoup capability, but also you've done some pretty big things in 2020, man. You appeared on a couple of episodes of AEW Dark, which is where some of our listeners and viewers may know you from. You wrestled against Jurassic Express and SCU. Do us a favor. Tell us a little bit about your AEW experience.
I thought it was a blast. You know, I thought it was like one of the best experiences I've had in my career. You know, to be just, you know, it's not very often I go to different states to wrestle and especially go, you know, all the way across the country. But to be there with all these other, you know, like S tier, S ranked level stars in the wrestling world, you know, and you're like, okay, cool. Like, and you do your best to try to fit in and feel like you belong. You know, right. you kind of you act like you've been there. You know, you try to maintain as much professionalism as possible. But they took such good care. You know, especially with and amid the COVID, all the precautions and doing. I think they just like got real like the taping that I had gone to. They just like hammered down and were real strict on everything. But luckily for me, like I had followed all the directions and all the protocols, and I was lucky enough, you know, to find myself backstage there. And it's such a beautiful setup, and like you get there early enough, and you just see all the crew and production setting up the stage, and then you just like this is crazy. Like you don't see this type of stuff here, on the indie level where you see like big giant speakers and pyrotechnics and stuff like that. So you're kind of like, wow, you're just intrigued by that, and I always try to like give those guys recognition, the cameramen and production guys that put together, that get there early and put together that stuff. While we go out there and get the shine, and you know, because they're the ones working the lights and they're the ones working the camera, they make us look good. So I've always had like a real good appreciation for production and camera crew and stuff like that. People work behind the scenes and they deserve props. So I was always kind of like get intrigued by stuff like that. But when I found out I was working like SCU, the first taping, or first episode I was on, I was pretty excited because like I was rolling a lot with them that particular trip. I was riding in their van with them, and they would take me to the airport to the hotel. It was cool that we all like had our own hotel room. So usually I'm used to like rooming and bunking with like three or four other guys, right, and like yeah. sharing a bed with another wrestler. But like, we was like, well, this is great. But it's like you feel like you should be like walking on eggshells and you're a little nervous, but then like, but you're not. Like the atmosphere is, you know, real cool because a lot of those people I'd already worked. A lot of guys already worked and already wrestled and knew, you know, hanging out with Rick Knox, who I hadn't seen in such a long time. Yep. It's so pivotal in my growth as a wrestler. It was cool that he was able to be the referee for my match, that my first one there. And I was pretty fortunate because with the dark match that I was on was taped before the episode of Dynamite. Okay. And this was like the first episode of Dynamite in like a month that they had with live audience. Yep. So I was the only dark match to have a live audience there.
Nice.
For my match. So and having to wrestle Frankie and Sky, like I said, you know, these guys that I look up to, guys that I know very well. And they're going, you know, first and foremost, their job is to, you know, put them over and make them look great, you know, but they were going out of their way to help me shine a little bit too. So, you know, you kind of always appreciate and respect that. And I remember, you know, being standing in the ring and just kind of taking it in because, you know, all the lights, all the colors, you know, standing in the center ring, I'm about to lock up with Frankie and, you know, fans out there. And I'm just like, man, imagine if this was full of people, but people were, you know, yelling out my name and like, oh, people know me. This is great. Okay, cool.
That's awesome.
And yeah, so I'm like, oh, this is cool. And then, you know, we went through the match and it just went off without a hitch. And then, you know, then we find ourselves, you know, a couple of days later. And it's me and Eric Watts, Eric Watts, but he was so upset about that. But me and Watts, against Jurassic Express, I'm like, oh, this is like a bar wrestling match. Yeah. This is going to be easy. So, you know, and we're, you know, Cole Cabana was our agent. So he was again, very familiar with all of us. And we're just like, cool. Let's go tear it up. You know, let's just have like we had like 10 minutes. So I'm like, oh, cool. Let's go have a 10-minute bar match. And out there and we, you know, and again, these are guys that, you know, and, you know, with Jungle Boy and Luchasaurus, the guys that I knew very well, I trained with them and I worked out with them. So they were going out of our way to help us out, you know, iron sharpens iron, and you know, if they, you know, they wanted to help us, and of course we're there to just specifically to help them, and you know, it's beneficial for everybody. You know, we all had a good match, and I think we did a great job. You know, it was a lot of fun. You know, you get to rub elbows with some people, get some from some perspectives from other people that you wouldn't normally see you. So you're just kind of like, get soaking in the advice and information, because like, you know, I don't really get it a lot. You know, I'm usually the guy that gives the advice. So, and I think whenever I ask people, hey, how did you do? They don't feel it's in their place, or don't feel that they want to tell me stuff that I've done wrong or do wrong or could have done better.
Sure.
So I don't think it's like very hard for me to like go out there and like, you know, I have to ask like two, three people out here in the scene to go, hey, how'd you think? And then they'll give me some advice or, you know, the pointers, so being there and, you know, pretty much being a greenhorn all over again and getting advice and getting some perspective was fresh. Like, God, thank God. I've been asking for this for so long, you know, cause I, you know, you don't want to hit a plateau where, you know, you grow. And then next thing you know, you're the teacher and everybody's asking you for the advice, but now like who's teaching me, you know, who's going to help me learn.
Ray, you know that only means one thing, and that means you're getting old, brother.
I am. I think in wrestling years or wrestling aspect, I guess I'm pretty old, or it should be. It's always been something that's been like, what's the word I'm looking for? To me, it's always been a touchy subject because it's like I'm only 34, which is young, right?
Right.
You know, it's in wrestling young, but it's like I feel like at 34, I should have accomplished more than I have at this age. Cause I always, you know, cause you shouldn't, but I do compare myself to other wrestlers that I look up to, and I go, well, at 34 they were doing this, at 34 they already done that. So I just use that to motivate and to push. And like, okay, cool. I just got to, you know. And you got to remember, I don't know if you guys know, but I was getting ready to retire from professional wrestling come That's April,
right. Yeah.
right before everything had shut down, and you know, decided not to, because it's like, I'm going to just keep pushing through. And luckily, you know, I didn't, because a lot of great opportunities had popped up. You know, there was very few shots to take in 2020 from April on. And and the ones that I did get, and the ones that I did take were ones that counted.
Yeah,
I feel.
Definitely, man. And so if you don't mind expanding upon that just a little bit, what was it exactly that kind of brought you back in? You said that you were talking about walking away in April. What was it that brought you back?
Well, first and foremost, it was my wife. you don't know. Like, I always listen to a lot of other wrestlers, and they talk about how their wives are like telling them to stop wrestling. And then I go, my wife wants me to keep wrestling. she knows how much wrestling makes me happy. Like, she knows how much fulfillment I get out of it. So,
right.
When I was talking about retiring, because I think I go through that every year, where I'm just kind of like down on it, and it's like, dang, I'm spinning wheels. I'm not making any progress and stuff like that. And I was getting ready to transition into just being a coach, being a trainer full time, just run the school, have spend more time at home. My second son, my third kid was being born. So I was like, okay, I think this is it. You know, I don't want to be too beat up, too broken. And I wanted to spend more time with him, with my baby.
Right.
And then, you know, my wife's like, you did the same thing when we had my first son. So she's like, what? You should just keep going and you should retire. You're not going to be happy. And then, of course, I had like a lot of other wrestlers telling me, like, just you should keep going, bro. Like, the, you know, and I don't know if they're just kind of like, you know, giving me lip service or just trying to feed into my ego, but they're like telling me, like, hey, man, like, you know, SoCal and the wrestling in general is good. They're going to need you, you know, like, yeah. It's going to need you now. They need you here. They need you to help you God learn. And, you know, and I've been told by people that I am, that I'm like, you're the, you know, the same, the thing, what I wanted earlier, and when I was talking about earlier, is like to be the reliable guy, you know, like, but if you leave, Ray, then you're a big pillar that's not going to be there. So I think like what first started off is like, okay, I will stay long enough to find out who the next person's going to be, and then I'm out of here. you know, like I'll get one person ready to take my spot, and then I'm gone. And then it's kind of just snowballed into me winning the, you know, Arizona State title from Championship Wrestling in Arizona, the PP3 Cup, and then the Hollywood Heritage title, and then going to AEW. And so, you know, it's just like, well, mm-hmm. And then – you know, getting new followers, getting new fans, getting, you know, requests for interviews and podcasts like you guys. And it's just like, okay, cool. Now, like I could do what I didn't do earlier on in my career is get myself out there and be bigger on social media and expand. And you guys, and thank you guys so much for allowing me to speak and be on your platform to spread my name and everything. Oh. But
pleasure's ours. So,
but like that's what I need to do. I need to jump on that now, especially with, you know, with in this pandemic when everybody's just sitting at home staring at their phones or computers and laptops. So it's just like a good time to get on it. And then you find that, okay, that little bit in the basement, of love for wrestling. And then you just, you know, ride it. And then I don't know when I'm going to retire. I probably won't announce it like I did the last time. I'll probably just fade away. Just disappear like Thanos snapped me or something. Just because I blew it. Like I made a big announcement, like I'm retiring, and you know, what was it? May 29th. It's like May 29th will be my last match ever. So if you guys want to see the history, you make sure to be there. And it's a big old thing, and we were building all the way to it. I was doing all these open challenges for all these you know, young upstart wrestlers to help put them over, get some, like, do some last minute you know, rubs for everybody before I go out. And then,
right,
you know, when you notice I'm doing that again, that's, you're like, oh, Ray's getting ready to retire.
or he's starting phase four of his career.
Right.
what does it mean to you? You know, you mentioned the Hollywood Heritage title, and Jordan Clearwater came up, you know, with that title now. What does it mean to you to get a chance to work with those guys who are the up and comers, especially, you know, when they have a look and they have decent in-ring style and they can cut a decent promo and you see that there's something there. Do you gravitate to seek them out, or do they tend to seek you out for advice?
I tend to gravitate towards them. I think I'll sit in the back and I'll be watching the monitor. And this year I've taken that role pretty seriously, because I'm like, I'm the champ, I'm the guy. If we were still have an audience, I would be the person in charge of drawing the audience, drawing the crowd. So that's kind of the try to take that role seriously that I was given. And so, you know, if I'm not put into position by a booker or promoter to help a person, you know, like, hey, we need you to get this guy over, we need you to put this guy a good match, we need you to prove that he could be a main eventer, so on and so forth, that's usually my jam. And then, and again, I take a lot of pride in that, because they believe in me to do that.
Yeah.
You know, with guys like, you know, Jordan specifically, you know, I'll just be in the back and I'll be watching the monitor, and I tend to try to watch all the young guys and see how they're progressing, because I take a lot of pride in our show.
Yeah.
You know, our show needs to be really good. We're airing on a lot of different markets. We're syndicated all over the country, and I want us all to look good. And I don't, you know, there's so many good productions and so much good wrestling out there that I want to make sure that we are on par with everyone else. And I do. And I watch the monitors when we're taping, and there's guys like, ah, oh, you shouldn't have did that, or ah, oh, you shouldn't have did that, or, you know, oh, good thing we had the benefit of not having fans here, and so on. And then I try to like pull them aside. Usually, you know, and again, luckily, I'm one of those guys where they might listen more times than not, because you know, there'll be guys that they'll come like, hey man, great match, and pat them on the back, and I'm like, yeah man, good and all, but you did this and this wrong, and then they'll be like, oh, you're right. Or they could be like, oh, fuck, this guy said I had a good match. but this guy said I had a good match. I don't know what it's right talking about. Yeah, so I think because I do that, or even because I and that's what puts a lot of pressure onto me, is like, well, if I give this person this kind of advice, I better not make the exact same mistake in my match. Yeah. Or let me show you what's the best way or right way to do that. It's like, hey man, yeah, we got stuck in a spot, or we didn't know how to fix it, we didn't know what to do, and I'm like, well, use the referee, have him help you correct it, or grab a hold and do this and this and that. And then I'm you know, if I happen to find myself in a situation at any point, like, hey, remember what we talked about earlier? Like, look at this, and this is what I had to do, or you know. It's all about experience. Yeah. It's all about going out there and making mistakes and going out there and messing up. And then you either like blow it and just bomb it, or you get lucky and you happen to find a way to fix it, or you're guided by someone in the ring with you to help it fix it. But it's always about experience. I tell all my students, it's like, man, you're going to have 100 bad experiences for every one like great, amazing experience. But I guarantee you, every mistake, you're never going to make the same mistake twice, because you're going to remember like, oh man, I know what to do this time, because the last time this worked. So I tell everybody, like, don't feel down when you make a mistake, feel bad when you make the same mistake twice.
Yeah.
You know, but because I've made a ton of mistakes. I've made all kinds of mistakes. I've done some stupid things in the ring. And then somewhere down the line, I'll finally, oh, I know how to fix this, because I've been in situations, I have experience. Early in my career, I took every and any booking I could, no matter how low paying it was or how bad the venue or reputation of the company, because again, you're like 1 or 2 years in, you're just trying to get as much work as you can.
Right.
You earn that luxury of being picky later on. You know, you earn that right to be picky when you build your notoriety, when you get that experience, when you become a better wrestler, a better worker.
Yeah,
but I tell them all, like, just take everything. There's no such thing as a bad experience. You're going to find yourself in an awesome, awkward situations, but you're always going to learn.
Yeah. You know,
the cavemen had to learn all kinds of stuff before we ended up here in 2020, you know? So that's how I look at it.
So true, man. That makes so much sense. And, you know, speaking of advice, you know, you had an amazing foundation, you know, learning from Joey Chaos, and you know, you've worked with David Marquez's UWN project, and you know, all of the federations that comprise that for the better part of a decade. And you had just mentioned AEW, that you're getting some advice from guys in AEW. So with all that stuff put together, what would you say is the best piece of advice you've been given in the pro wrestling business?
I think I'll just go with my most recent piece of advice that I got, and it's surprised to be recency biased, but it's we can all learn how to do it, but we need to learn why.
Great.
You know, like we could do how to do these cool moves, but we need to learn why it goes in this particular spot or this particular spot, or why to use it in this. So like everything's been kind of like, okay, you know how, but now I need to know why. That right now has been the biggest piece of information. Then again, I just got it like, you know, a few months ago, because you never stop learning. Here I am, you know, 11 years, and I go everywhere to train with everybody, and in Southern California. Well, and it was Paul London. Paul London was the one that gave me that advice.
Oh wow!
It's people know how, but they need to learn why, you know.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. I think what happens, wrestling, unless you have an amazing teacher who's really, you know, done it before on a big scale, you kind of forget. As an actor, it's one of the biggest things you can learn, and that is, when you're doing something, you have to be doing it for a reason. Everything has an intention, because everything in life has an intention. You always have a consequence of a decision. Exactly. So that makes a lot of sense.
What's that cliche when the actor is talking to his director, he's like, well, what's my motivation?
Yeah, exactly.
Right? It is. It's like, What's my motivation in the scene, or what's my motivation in this match? What's my intent?
Well, in acting terms, what we call it is, what is your want? Your want. And that word is like the biggest word, because what then happens is, if you know clearly your want, now you have to figure out, how do I get it? And in wrestling, that is the best translation, because the how do I get it not only applies to what you're doing in the ring, in particularly breaking it down, but also your promo. You're going out to the ring, period. If you don't have a want, if you don't have an intention when you go out there, then why the fuck are you going out there?
The promo's got to be like, what am I talking about, or what's the point of my promo? What I always ask is like, well, so what's my end game here? And they're like, oh, you're just mad about this. I'm like, okay, well, what exactly? And then I'll have to make up my own or remember, that happened in this match, or that happened in this match. And you know, there are some promo points we're given, but a lot of times we're given free range to just make up stuff our own. So that's why we'll have to make it make sense within the realm of the story we're trying to tell within this promotion, but then also make sense for our individual characters. Like, Ray Rosas wouldn't say something like that, but he would say this. He would say some or phrase it or word it in this way. This is what Ray's mad about. Ray doesn't care about this. Ray's mad about this. But it still kind of drives the story forward to the end game of the final blow-off match or whatever.
Right. And it also gives – I always think that – that also gives the reasoning to the run-ins. You know, I think that everyone kind of feels that when you have those melees, it's kind of a quick out for companies to use that as, you know, well, just have a dust up and, you know, then we'll carry it to next week or whatever.
Yeah,
you should always have it. Like, if you're going out for a dust up, you should have those intentions of, why the fuck are you even going out there? Because otherwise, you literally look like a person who's going out there because you've just been told, go out there and finish this up.
Yeah, you're a walking MacGuffin.
Yeah,
you're just walking MacGuffin. You just go out there to move the plot forward. But yeah, man, it's I think one of the So I think I got some advice from Christopher Daniels a long time ago. It was just like, just have conviction in everything you do. just go, you know, go out there and have intent, have conviction, and believability is, you know, is what we're doing. We're trying to, you know, give people something to believe in, and the realer we make it look, the better and the more intent. Because again, if we're going out there like, okay, they just told me to do a run in, and we're half hearted believing in it, you know, it's, of course it's going to come off as phony and hokey. But if we're like, no way, man, these fools have been fucking with me for way too long, and it's time that they get fucked with, and so that's enough's enough, you know, time for change. Owen Hart.
And it's really interesting because thinking about what you just said, I think of when I was growing up and watching the territory wrestling, one of the things that was always, you know, out there in front of you was the fact that the audience believed it was real. Now, you can easily say, well, nowadays it's because marks are smart. But the best wrestler makes a fucking mark go, is that guy really doing it? MJF, best example right now in the business of someone who can do something. And you kind of go, well, was that his character or is he really a dick?
Yeah.
And that's,
yeah, he blurs that line.
Yeah. And I think that's when, you know, when you guys can convey that kind of stuff, that's when it becomes enjoyable again to a fan, because of the fact that fans are so jaded that when they're questioning in their own mind, if this is this real or not real. And a lot of times you hear that about guys in the ring, right? Oh, yeah. Well, that, you know, that looked really stiff. This guy, you know, looks like he's really beating the shit out. But in honesty, the character is the thing. If you can make a mark go, is that real? Then you should be signed by the top company. Although the top company tends to then give you something that totally throws that out the door. And now you're Duke the Dumpster, you know?
Yeah. Right. Your Coco Beware.
Yeah. And walking around with a fucking bird for the rest of your career, you know?
It's just, people are just now finding out how badass Coco was before you got signed.
Right.
You know, yeah. With all those gifts and stuff.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
Yeah.
But I see what you mean. You know, like I think I excel pretty well in the television style of wrestling. I think making that transition will be easy. You know, it's tough sometimes. You're given a character, you're given an idea, and you have to make it work, make it run, and that's just, again, it's how much you want to buy into it and believe in it. And then if you're able to make that work, then I think that you're pretty much guaranteed a job for forever, because if they're like, let's give him this gimmick, and if he makes it work, he's good, and then you're like, oh shit, he made it work. All right. But it's just kind of like it's your job. You're given a role, you know. It's like if you got picked up for a role in a movie or on a TV show, and they said, hey, the writers are going in this direction, this is how they want you to be. Of course, you could give your input, but ultimately, it's the vision of the writers and the directors, the bookers and the promoters on how your character trajectory is. You know, of course, you might build a fan following. You know, as most shows, TV shows do, like, oh man, my favorite characters, you know, so and so, and then hopefully. But then you might turn around and oversaturate that character, because then like, cool, let's push him more, let's push him more. Like, oh, he was a cool second banana, but I don't think he's a good lead, you know.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the same thing. We're all built differently and different for different roles, and you know, I think it's our potential that we can live up to or live down to.
Yeah.
But it's all, you know, it's so many working parts to make it succeed. And when it does, man, that's when you know something's really over.
Yes.
So that's to making lots of money, it's making history. So it's when everything clicks together, you get a Stone Cold Steve Austin, and you get a Rock, and you get a John Cena, and you get stuff that happens like that. And that's what makes it so special. That's what, you know what I mean? Because when you get those manufactured cookie cutter, like, we're going to make this guy a guy, and he's, you know, he can't fill the role because he doesn't fully believe it, or he's not ready for it, and then that's when stuff starts to spiral out.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a business. It's what it is. That's how it is.
Definitely, man. And now, obviously, you had mentioned your students previously. In addition to all this stuff that you're doing, you're also the head trainer at the Millennium Wrestling Academy. How long have you been training students there, and how long, how have you been able to respond to everything COVID related?
I was training there for, I think, 3 or 4 years now. I just got a job there because I specifically was trying to get there to help them, because they were, mm-hmm. they were a small promotion, like in their own little corner, SoCal. Yep. And nobody really talked or heard about it. And I caught a few videos and I'm like, these guys are good. They just need help. Like some of the talent they were getting there, which weren't just like, these guys can't be expected to lead them, you know?
Right.
So I just go ahead. I just kind of, you know, hey, like, put some calls out and found myself there. And I didn't try to talk down to nobody when I got there. I'm like, this, I'm a guest here in your guys' house. And if you guys are interested, I can help you with this. And one of the first things that blew everybody's mind on the first show I was on was like, hey, is anybody working a specific hold? Is anybody doing this? Is anybody working a knee in their match? And they're like, what? And I'm like, yeah, because my match really hinges on me working a knee for the finish to work. As a matter of fact, is anybody doing a count out finish? And they're like, what? And they're like, so like even stuff like that, they were like, we're blown away. And then they were like, that makes a lot of sense. And then the next thing you know, they're like asking me for advice and asking. And then I was working as a trainer somewhere else. And then the place got shut down. And then the very next day, Millennium Wrestling Academy called me, said, hey, come be your trainer over here. Mm. And I'm like, all right, perfect. But yeah, like balancing, the wrestling with the teaching, it's, I like, man, everything's about balance, because it's really hard to balance, you know, family life with the wrestling, and now balancing the wrestling with the teacher. But you find it if you really want it to happen, you find the balance. But a lot of these times we were wrestling weekly with Millennium, so Millennium would have a training throughout the week, and then every Friday night they're running a show. So it was a good way to balance, because anything we were learning in class, a lot of these guys were applying on the Friday night show that they were doing. So it was like it was a student show. So a lot of every Friday, and like, what a great way for all these kids to gain experience by wrestling every single week. They would train with me, and then I would be on the show, and I would wrestle a few of them or wrestle them. And then the rest would be, you know, pretty much applying like, hey, they did the spot we did, or they did that drill you were doing. And so I was like, oh, cool. At least they're listening, and they're learning how to apply it. When COVID first hit, like our particular facility is attached or inside of a rock climbing gym. Mm. So since the rock climbing gym is closed, we are closed.
Right.
But when we were open for that month, I focused on a lot of cardio drills. So I was doing some three cone sprints. I was doing a lot of football drills for the help with the cardio. I was doing a lot of ladder drills, boxing drills, mixed martial art drills, stuff that help with our footwork and stuff with our cardio, so that we can keep a lot of distance between ourselves, and we can all be working on all sides of the arena of the gym.
Right.
So it's like, okay, they're doing the X drill over there, they're doing sprints over here, they're doing box jumps over here. So that means only one person's going to be in the ring doing some sort of drill, and I just try to keep my classes limited to a certain size and keep everybody at a distance. And so, once everything shut back down here in Southern California, we had to close down. So we haven't had a facility to train. We've been finding rings here and there, but somebody has or might be open for a little bit, running some drills. But it's been pretty scarce here with ring time when it comes to training. But I try to keep in touch a lot of my students and talk to them about wrestling. The good thing about them is they since they're watching a lot of the current stuff, I don't really watch a lot of the current, WWE. Sure. Or like any current, a lot of the indies. I try to try to watch just 1996, 1997 Thunder. that's what I tend to watch most of the time. But they I'll see a GIF, on Twitter, and then I'll show it to them. Like, hey, did you guys see this? And like, yeah, we saw it. The match was really good. And then we'll try to break it down. And they keep my ear to the ground when it comes to like what's hot, what's fresh in wrestling. And I usually have a good nose for okay, this is the new trend in wrestling, that particular spot or that particular style. And then you kind of, okay, let's adapt it to us,
right?
So we'll take a style or a spot or whatever the trend is, and we can kind of work it into our style that we're already working, without us having to look like a copycat.
Yeah,
that's what it is. Wrestling's just, you know, a copycat.
Definitely, man. And now you mentioned running football drills. Now you're quite the LA Rams fan, man. I saw on your social media.
Yeah.
You're all about the Rams, brother. So
right.
I've got to ask you probably one of the most important and pivotal questions of this entire interview. How do you think things pan out for them for the rest of the season?
I think they're gonna probably end up with the number 2, number 3 seed. I have a good feeling they'll probably end up in the conference final. It'd probably be either against New Orleans. Maybe I don't know if they'll probably play them again, depending how the seeding works out. But I think they could potentially go it all the way because they're gelling together. They're figuring it out this late in the, you know, like this late in the season.
Yep.
Like people always throw the Buffalo Bills or the Miami Dolphins game at us. Like, oh, well, so the number 2 defense. Well, look at these guys. They torched you. Well, like, well, you know, the Dolphins beat us defensively. And yeah, Josh Allen is a generational talent. So that Bills game was like week 3, week 4. And so like the defense defense wasn't quite as gelled together yet, but now they're clicking on all cylinders.
They're looking tough.
Yeah. So I'm really hoping that they go to Super Bowl and they, you know, of course go Super Bowl, win it all. And they bring a third championship to LA. Because the Dodgers and the Lakers already did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
the Chargers ain't going to do it.
No.
And, you know, it's funny because there's only been one town recently that has been able to say that with hockey and baseball and football at the same time, and that was fucking New England.
Yeah, Boston.
Boston, Jesus.
Tattletown.
It's amazing. And now I just would love to see L.A., just finally, you know, hit that trifecta, and then maybe just out of the craziness that was this year, the Kings can pull out with their young core a champion.
Yeah.
It would just be great to see all 4 teams win.
It'd be great. And I mean, it'd be a great day because I think California needs it. As I know Southern California, LA needs it. We're locked down the tightest in the whole state, and we need that. We need that feel good moment, even though it would probably mean a bunch of people out in the streets breaking protocol. Yeah. But you know,
of course.
Well, you know, speaking of that, what have you been doing during the pandemic to keep you and your family sane?
Well, the first couple months, I was researching a lot of football drills and stuff like that for training because I was just like, okay, at the time, we didn't know how long it was going to be. So I was like, right. Okay, whenever this relaxes, I'll be ready with us for brand new drills, brand new curriculum. And then, of course, you know, now that with no ending in sight, barring the 100% accuracy of the vaccine,
right?
I'm not really, you know, expecting any gyms to open up or any wrestling schools to open up anytime soon. But, you know, it's just been kind of sitting at home, you know, waiting for, you know, keeping everybody safe. Cause you know, I have 3 young children, and they all need to go to school. So my wife stays at home with the kids and she, you know, she's a, you know, a saint for having to help a 6-year-old learn how to read and learn how to do math. Cause now math is differently the way they teach these kids these days. So, so she's doing all that. She's got her hands full with that. Luckily for me, my actual shoot job hasn't been impacted. If anything, it's given me more work.
Sure.
So I find myself working 6-7 days a week, so we're doing pretty good. Nobody in my immediate family has come down with anything. So we've been very lucky, been very blessed, and you just, you know, want it all to be over, man. I don't want my kids to go back to school. I want them to play with their friends. You know, my daughter's in her, you know, freshman year of high school, and she, you know, she's spending it in her room on her bed, you know, just in front of a laptop. But she probably would have been in doing that anyway, but you know, I need to kick her out of the house every once in a while.
You said your daughter being a freshman in high school, does it frighten you a little bit that she'll have a license within the next year or so?
I don't. I like I said, she's such a shut in. I don't think she'd even want to learn how to drive. I'll probably have to drive her everywhere.
Well, actually, after you get your license in LA and you drive for the first time and you're sitting there forever, it just makes more sense. I would totally have been like, hey, Dad, why don't you just drive me around? Because
I'm glad I didn't learn how to drive in Los Angeles. I learned, you know, I lived in the Antelope Valley, which is in the high desert, about 80, 90 miles north of Los Angeles. And it's a vast, empty desert. Mm. So I learned how to drive up there. And having learned to drive down here in L.A. would be a nightmare. Like, I understand. We'll take Uber everywhere.
What would you say your go-to is for any kind of entertainment, movie or TV wise?
Right now I'm on Hulu, so I'm watching that show Superstore. I didn't realize how funny that show was. Yep. I already, waited for Cobra Kai to come back.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of anime, so I watch. I've been watching My Hero Academia, and I've been watching Attack on Titan. Just came back for season 4. That's nice. A good one.
Yeah.
So, but like all the shows that I watched, I finished or this series have ended. Because to watch A Good Place, I used to watch BoJack Horseman.
Yeah.
A lot of these shows are have ended or ending. Yeah. So I'm trying to find something new that fits that very particular taste that I have. Waiting for the next season of The Boys. The Mandalorian, of course, is amazing. So just sitting here trying to find different things to watch, and I do miss going to the movie theater. So I used to love taking my kids to the movie theater and eating popcorn.
Yep.
That's one thing I miss a lot of all this.
And you know what's so sad? What's so sad about it too is, even if you go to a movie theater now, my whole thing is I don't want to go into a movie theater and then have to wear a mask for an hour and a half or 2 hours when you want to eat popcorn, you want to have a drink.
Red Vines and soda, just shoving everything in your face. And it's tough times.
And isn't it funny, too, that we can, in this day and age, we can't go to a movie. Man, times are tough.
Times are tough. That shows how spoiled we are. Because we're social animals. Like we want to be around people. We want to be doing things. And sure, I'm sure a lot of people's mental health have been impacted. You see it all the time. People reaching out to other people on social media, going like, hey, just if you need help, someone to talk to. Of course, we're all out here. We're all just a text away. It's crazy to think that that's the big, it's such a big inconvenience to us of not being able to go to a movie theater, but just those little luxuries that you miss. And we're getting used to it more and more.
Yeah.
I was thinking about, I heard that, I heard that song, it's the end of the world as we know it. Right. So I was listening to that song on my headphones. I was at work. And when he said, this is the end of the world as we know it. And I go, and as the line hit me, because it really is the end of the world as we knew it. There's so much stuff is, movie theaters going out of business and small businesses and all the social justice movements that have happened and everything and all the changes that have happened in this last year. Like a lot of stuff there's some stuff that's probably not going to come back anymore.
Well, let me.
There's probably some stuff that's going to come back. So I was thinking like this really, like it really was the end of the world as we knew it, because now we're in the new normal.
Let me ask you this, because you just brought up something that really didn't hit me in terms of I was already in my early 20s, but did you feel that same way when 9/11 happened, because you were right around start of high school for you?
I remember waking up, that one that impacted me very deeply. And I remember, because I was planning to join the military after high school. Yeah. Then it just to go to college and stuff like that. And then when that happened, my mom was like, no, you can't join the Marines.
Yeah.
You're going to be sent to war. And I had a friend in high school that did follow through, and he did get deployed, and then he ended up getting killed by driving over a landmine.
Jesus.
So it's just like there was this kind of, maybe not as, well, probably just as extreme, I think, because I think the same amount of people have passed away. But yeah, it was something like that. I think that's the end. It was the end of the world as we knew it, because ever since then, it's been Homeland Security this and this and that. But
yeah,
you know, and then there are presents. You know, I don't know how we got this, but how we got here, but yeah, here we are. But
yeah,
yeah, I remember like being like 16 years old, and you know, I didn't have an alarm clock. I had my alarm set on my TV, so my TV would turn on
sure.
the news, so that way I could see how the weather was when I woke up. But yeah, that was on the news, and that was just like what I woke up to. So yeah, that was a long time ago.
It doesn't, you know, isn't that just the weirdest thing, man? We're going through this now, and that feels like that was so far away, considering what we're going through now. It's, and we've, you know, in our lifetimes, that's really been the most dramatic things, you know, but you can go back and think about, you know, parents who lived through the Kennedy assassination. You know, it's just, it's very interesting when you think of these events that, you're right, that changes the way we viewed the world and how it was. And it's just crazy to think that, you know, we've had these experiences. And I would hate to think what the next experience, you know, 20 years from now, what is the next thing? And it's like, oh, God.
Because, well, we made it through it, you know. We got through it. We got through it then, and we're going to get through it now, and we'll probably get through it in the future, you know. And it's just crazy to think that the pro wrestling industry has survived, you know. Mm-hmm. Like WWE made adjustments to make the best of the situation. AEW, Impact, ROH, they've all, you know, made adjustments and survived. So like none of, like, it's pretty cool that none of those companies went under.
Yeah.
In spite of all this that's been going on in the world, you know, people, you know, losing a lot of stuff, but you know, at least wrestling's there for us still.
Yeah. As we wrap up, can you let the audience know what social media handles you have so they can follow you, and maybe where they could possibly get any kind of merchandise to kind of help support you through this time?
Sure. Let's see. You follow me on Twitter at Ray Rosas. I'm pretty funny on there. I don't tweet often, but when I do, it's a good one. you could catch me on Instagram at other Ray Rosas, because I tried to get the Ray Rosas handle on that platform, but somebody already got it. So like when people were tagging me, they're tagging that guy, and I go, no, I'm the other Ray Rosas. Everybody gets a laugh out of that. I don't really have a lot going on for me right now. Aside from the fact that throughout the pandemic, I was having a phony imposter Ray Rosas on Twitter that was making things pretty entertaining for me for a little bit. So he was stealing pictures and making them me. And that was a fun, I haven't talked about that in so long, but yeah, that was pretty, like, not a fun, but like, that was just like, God, this is ridiculous. It was funny in how ridiculous it was. This person was going out of their way to pretend to be me. And I'm like, how low is your self-esteem if you're going to pretend to be me? Like, go pretend to be someone popular or famous.
Did you have to ask your wife, hey, by the way, are you sick?
We spent like literally the whole summer like trying to block and report this guy. We finally got him. Got him off there. But you just like, and it's funny because I used to laugh at other people that would like, hey, report, you know, like you see a lot of other celebrities or workers. Like, hey, report this account to pretending to be me asking for money and this and that, or just report this account. And I was like, that's funny. And then next, it happened to me. I'm like, God, this is miserable. Get this person off me. It's Twitter, Instagram is where I'm probably the most active. Facebook is there, but you know, I'm trying to whittle that down so it's just more of a personal account. Let's see what else I got going. You go to United Wrestling Network has Ray Rosas merchandise. I don't have the link off the top of my head, but you can get the Ray Rosas 2-time champion 2020 t-shirt with me when I was both a Hollywood Heritage champion and Arizona State champion. Now they're pretty dated now because I lost the Hollywood Heritage title. Sad days, #sad days. Well, man, yeah, thanks a lot, guys, for allowing me to talk. And
no, man, you guys, and we appreciate it, man, because again, we love your work. You know, I think that a lot of times, you know, when a wrestler is not on the huge stage, a lot of times the actual work gets overlooked. You know, it's easy to say, oh, yeah, I love this person because, you know, they're always fed to you. But, you know, when you see guys like yourself who have been working for a long enough time to realize that A, you're always going to keep learning, and B, that you have enough knowledge to understand what it is you're actually doing, then it makes it so much more entertaining to watch, because of the fact that you raise the level of whoever you're working with. And I think, you know, and again, when you work with guys like Marquez, it's awesome because of the fact that everyone who works in that realm on creative, the word creative is perfect to describe what they are. They're all, you know, great people. So it's nice to see, you know, that you still have an outlet, that you haven't retired. And we just want more people to follow you and enjoy, you know, because again, you never know when you're gonna, you know, all of a sudden say, okay, I'm good, I'm just gonna teach now, you know. So yeah. we appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate all the work, man.
We appreciate you. Thank you.
Awesome. And for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. Remember, subscribe, download, share, review all of the Vegas Bad Boys podcasting shows that we have. And until next time, we'll see you then.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.